I'm an absolute torment for perfection and obsessing about the detail, because the very day we get complacent and don't sort of knock it out of the ballpark for a client, that day is when Argo will no longer be considered for that client's future project.
Hello and welcome to episode 90 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast with me, Gary Fox. It's Thursday. It's your big interview. Like how I did that. We'll have to come up with a new name for that in 2021, as it's just a bit dull. So send me your suggestions for what we can call the Thursday interview series. Today is very special. I'll get to that in just a second. A little bit of housekeeping first. Go to mrgaryfox.com. Enter your email and join the newsletter. I send out a free newsletter every single Monday. It goes along with the Idea Lab, which I also put out on a Monday, which is available as a podcast, but it's also available on YouTube. So go and subscribe to me there as well. I really do want to push the podcast as hard as I can and get reach as many people as possible. So if you are enjoying it, please share it with one other person right now. Go share it with one other person right now. Open WhatsApp. Send them a link to the podcast. I would appreciate that very much. We're almost at the end of lockdown, which means we're almost at the end of my momentum challenge. What I did was I simply vowed, sounds very dramatic. I simply said I would exercise every single day for lockdown, and I've done it so far. I won't jinx it because we're not there yet, but we're almost there. So I've been exercising every single day. Hasn't been easy. I've done all different types of stuff. I've worked in the home gym. I've done running. I've done sea swimming. It is cold. If you're following me on Instagram and it looks cold, it's very cold, but it's also unbelievably good. I'm also working with Parallel Nutrition on this, and they've been helping me with my nutrition because that's always been the area I've fallen down on. I've always done a lot of exercise, but I've always fallen down in the nutrition side. So partnering up with Parallel was brilliant, as they deliver your breakfast, lunch and dinner twice a week. How good does that sound? It's as good as it sounds, if I'm very honest. I've been using it now for just nearly a month, and it is incredibly handy. Literally been able to pop your lunch into the microwave and it's ready in 4 minutes or less. It is incredible. So go to parallelnutrition.ie, check them out, especially if you are looking at starting the new year with a bang. I would say start right now. Don't wait until January, because New Year's resolutions are a bit of a joke. I'll talk about that in an upcoming, I think, Idea Lab. That's going to be my pet topic for maybe next week. But go to parallelnutrition.ie, check out the lads. They're just nice people as well. That is my vow on the podcast. I try where possible just to work with nice people, because the world is big enough and you may as well work with people you like. Now, we get to today's guest, and he is very different. And I mean that in the best possible way. I heard a great phrase on a podcast a couple of months ago, and I've kept it at my front of mind ever since, as breaking your frame of reference. We all have, you know, we all have things that we know, and we all have things that we like, and we kind of tend to stay in our lane. And it's something I try avoid on the podcast. I try not to fall down the rabbit hole of getting just people I know, or just industries I like, or businesses I'm interested in, or businesses that I have a knowledge of. I try to push that boundary wherever possible, because I just don't want to become that kind of person. I want to appeal to a broad base of entrepreneurs, and because you learn so much from people when you go outside your comfort zone. And David is the founder of a very interesting company who are based in Barbados. You didn't think I was going to say that, did you? So the chat I had with David, he was sitting in his beautiful house in Barbados, and his only complaint was it was very warm. I was sitting in Ireland looking out at grey skies and not feeling any sympathy for David. But David has, what caught me about David was his unbelievably unique story and just how he ended up being an entrepreneur. Listen out for that part, because it's one of the most... Every podcast I do tends to have a moment where I'm like, damn, that's interesting. And it makes me think in a new way. And the moment in David's interview is when he describes to me why and how he started Argo. It's a very transformative story. And I think a lot of people are going to relate to this. This was another reason for bringing David on. David went to the Caribbean to start his dream job. And just a couple of months later, I'm not going to, spoiler alert here, I'm not going to give it all away. A couple of months later, that all went very, very, very wrong. And he ended up in a very dire situation. which led to him becoming an entrepreneur. I'm going to leave it there. I'm going to tease that one there. So here we go. Mr. David Campion of Argo Development Studio. David, welcome to the pod.
Thanks, Gary. Great to be on.
I never usually do this. This is never my first question, but can you describe exactly where you are, David, please?
Okay, so I'm hiding from the sun in our home on Atlantic Shores, Seaside Drive, on the coast of Barbados, in the West Indies.
That's definitely a first for the pod. Thank you, David. Just so everyone in Ireland feels exactly. What temperature is it today?
33 degrees today. And as I said, I was going to do this from my terrace, but I just thought it'd be too much for you. You'd be too jealous. And also, the sun is unbearable.
That's the definition of first world problems, David. I'm sitting, this is November in Ireland. I'm sitting looking out at the grayest sky in the world. So look, thank you for that. Thank you for that little bit of ray of sunshine for everyone. David, tell us what you do and why you're in Barbados.
So I'm an architectural technologist. I started my own company called Argo Development Studio. And Argo is an architectural practice specializing in digital construction. So just give you a little bit of insight into what digital construction is for some context. We use a process called building information modeling, and that allows us to design, cost and construct buildings in a virtual environment before they ever make their way to a building site. So that allows us to systematically analyze in a very intelligent way the building's performance, the servicing of the building, the engineering of the building, climate resilience, costing, health and safety, and so on, even down to sort of programming of the building and the timeline it takes to complete it. So these digital twins that we create of these buildings are then sort of more, a lot more efficient to and can realize savings of between 15 and 20% over conventional two-dimensional delivery.
Wow. Okay. And I imagine on big projects, which you'd be working on, that's huge. That's colossal figures.
That is. Yeah.
I'll ask the obvious question, get it out of the way. How does an Irishman end up in Barbados?
Well, a long story, but I'll try and keep
we've got time.
As brief as I can.
We've got time.
We have? Okay, great. Okay. How far do you want me to go back? I suppose, listen, I grew up with a passion for soccer. But I played with St. Malachy's and Eden Moor. I was moving through the teams. And, of course, my mates were being invited on trials to England, but I never got the nod. Okay. So that wasn't going to be a profession for me. So my father was a contractor. And my brothers and I were dragged out of bed every Saturday morning and worked on building sites. So we got a great appreciation for the trades, for an honest living, you know, mixing plaster, driving dumpers, labouring for carpenters and bricklayers. So I got my first exposure to the construction industry through that. Then I suppose in school, I wasn't the most studious. I was a bit of a messer. One career guidance class, my English teacher, Brendan O'Leary, asked everybody, what are you going to do when you leave school? And of course, when it came to my turn, I said, well, I'd like a career in architecture. And of course, all my mates burst out laughing because they know me as a messer. But just leaving the classroom at the end, Brendan turns and says, Campo, are you serious about your interest in architecture? I said, yes. So he said, leave it with me. So he got me some work experience with his brother, who ran an architectural firm in Dublin, Royal Architects, Sean O'Leary. So that was it. From that work experience, I knew straight away, this is the career path. Fell in love with everything architecture represented. And went to college, went to the States after graduating, hung around San Francisco for 3 years, worked with a firm, earthquake proofing, refurbishing, redesigning blocks of apartments in San Fran. Came back sort of after 3 years and went for an interview with the same Muriel era architects that I began my work experience with when I was 16. So that interview was funny because Sean said, I don't really need to see your portfolio. And I'm saying, Sean, come on, treat this like a proper interview. I'd like it to be a proper interview. Because as far as they were concerned, he wanted me in there. And we'd great already established a great relationship. But so I was lucky enough to work with Muriel Era. And I worked for Muriel Era for 10 years and became an associate director after a few years. And worked on some great projects around Dublin. Carton House Hotel out in Kildare. I think you're a golfer, so you might know that one.
I was actually out there. It's funny you said that. It popped into my mind earlier when we were chatting off camera, right, about being out there just before lockdown, and they're actually doing a massive refurb there again as well.
That's right, yeah. You know, Trinity Student Accommodation in Dartrey, Terminal 1 Airport. They were some of my last projects, Belvedere College. So how did I leave? So 2009, as we all knew, the writing was on the wall. I think everything was in the recession was coming. But Muriel Era had won a project in the Caribbean, in the island of St. Vincent, a resort. And I started working with the team on that. Then it was decided it was in their interest to establish an office to provide local input to that project, but also to explore opportunities around the Caribbean and into South America. So 4 interviews later, I was driving home on the eve of my final interview. I sort of said to myself, I should probably mention this to my wife.
That was going to be my next question. It's like, how did that conversation go?
I didn't know how far I'd get in proceedings, and I was sort of taking it one step at a time. But Adele, her initial reaction was, no, I'm not going to the Caribbean. Why would I go to the Caribbean? But I suppose when I gave her some context and she went away and did a bit of a research, the next morning at breakfast, she said, hey, listen, go for it. It's the worst that can happen. We'll have a bit of an experience. Well, we 3 kids at the time, so you can imagine. So went in, was awarded the position, and flew out on an exploratory visit in November 2009. And then arrived, you know, set up schools and accommodation and stuff, and then arrived with the family January 2010, from a snowy Dublin airport to, you know, 34 degrees in Barbados.
What a time as well, January to land. Like, and I just even trying to imagine that whole process is massive. So what was the first kind of couple of months like?
You go into all autopilot because there's so much you need to do, and getting the kids settled in school, and getting into a routine, organizing accommodation, you know, getting yourself set up to pay bills locally, all that administration stuff. Then at the same time, so you're trying to establish the home for the family and a bit of a routine. And you're also trying to establish an office for Muriel Era and get that up and running and hunt down new opportunities. So a bit of a crazy 3 months. And then jumping on planes to explore those opportunities and jumping on a plane to St. Vincent. Yeah, so I was in a meeting in St. Vincent, and phone was ringing, and I didn't want to interrupt the meeting. It was my wife, and I'll call her back. Persistent call. So I said, something's wrong here. I had to step out of the meeting. And she said, David, I just got a call from one of her friends back home, and it was announced on the RT News that Muriel Era had gone into liquidation. So
on the news, so you hadn't heard
on the news.
Oh,
I hadn't heard. So that was difficult. You know, we'd all known of the struggles that every company was going through, but hadn't received anything official. But so that was that. So my reaction was really to control her reaction. So I said, that's okay. I've known this is coming and already have a plan B. So don't be worrying. And of course, immediately she was relieved. Oh, you do? Okay, great. Okay, I'll talk to you when I get home. No problem. You know, hung up the phone, went in, finished the meeting. Then everything, it was just, you know, grab 5 minutes to myself to think about what is the plan B. you go into sort of preservation mode, and you know, you gather your thoughts and you straight away, I suppose you start to see connections outside Murray O'Leary, opportunities. So I panic. So I just considered, what were those plan Bs? How real were they over the coming days and weeks? And, you know, eventually signed consultancy contracts, then worked for a developer for 16, 18 months, but wasn't quite settled. Mm. And in the back of my mind was always, you know, there's big opportunity here for a practice that, you know, can deliver the kind of service that I knew the Caribbean needed.
Okay. What? That's a bit of a mad story, to be honest.
Yeah.
What was your initial, like, how long were you there? How long were you in the Caribbean at that stage?
Only 3 months.
Okay. So you barely had just got your feet warm in the nice golden sand when this happened. Like, did you ever have that thought of, oh, we'll just go back. We'll just leave and go back to Dublin.
Of course that was, you know, of course that was an option as well. But I suppose, so maybe it's an Irish thing, but, you know, retreating after 3 months mm-hmm. with the family, with your tail between your legs, you know, that's just certainly not something I wanted to do. And I just, you know, I promised, it was a big decision for my wife and the kids to jump on a plane and move their lives to the Caribbean. And so I didn't want to let anyone down. So I said, I've promised you we'll have a journey for a year. I'm going to make sure we have a journey for a year. But then, of course, the year became 2 and 3. And
so what was your journey then to becoming an entrepreneur yourself? Was that something, when this bad, bad, bad situation happened, did you kind of go, do you know what, there's an opportunity here to pursue something I'd always wanted? Or is this something that was kind of like, well, we've no real option here, we just got to go for it?
Yeah, I suppose, the options were continue as a consultant, you know, move another developer or take a couple of the offers I'd had from architectural practices, looking for senior personnel. It was one attractive position, really, and I flew over to meet with the practice in Kuala Lumpur. And, you know, that would have been an exciting opportunity. But again, it meant throwing the family on another flight and moving them again. And I just thought that wasn't fair with schools and kids, and kids had started in soccer teams and swimming and cross country, and they were enjoying life in Barbados. Yeah, so I got by, but I knew I wasn't satisfied with the kind of work that I was doing. I knew I could do more. I knew there was something else that I needed to satisfy with my own ambition. So start my own business started to come, you know, subconsciously that was always in the back of my mind. I started to put things down on paper. You know, what would the identity of my brand be? And why am I so sure it would be successful? You know, USPs, points of differentiation, brainstormed all that and convinced myself this will work. The Caribbean needs Argo. And so sat, My father and mother were actually over for a bit of a holiday, and we were staying with them at a hotel on the south coast, and there was a swim-up bar, and I remember sitting there having a beer with my dad, and he said, "There's something wrong. What's in the back of your mind?" And I said, "Oh, I just wanted to bounce a few things off you." So he was the one that said, "You've done all your homework. You know, you need a little bit of support. I'll give you that support." And you've never failed at anything. You've set your mind to. So go for it. The next day I went and registered the business locally, and we start to grow it from there.
It doesn't get much more luxurious than a swim up bar. That's a great good starting point. If anything half as good as that happens afterwards, that's a good place to start. So what is it like?
Those moments, I suppose, you'll never forget.
I think you have to capture them, because I think that's what we all struggle with is just, we're so busy running to do this, you have to kind of like freeze frame these things because it's a long journey. So what was it like? You were only there 3 months. What was it like setting up a new company? You were a first-time entrepreneur. You've done a lot of things, but you're a first-time entrepreneur. What was it like setting everything up in a country you had very minimal experience in?
Yeah. So very difficult, daunting, lonely. you know, because like everywhere, Barbados has its own network, you know, a network of individuals that have grown up together. Mm-hmm. So if a client has a buddy that he went to school with and he's an architect or firm, then that's where they're always going to go, no matter what this new entity is promising and the efficiencies that we were in the industry. It was very difficult. But the strategy at the start was, okay, I know what I'm good at. Let me focus my and let them be the sort of the platform that I use to get me in front of the right people. And eventually, I will get some traction. I'll get some business. So I also focused on the big brands because in the Caribbean, you know, I thought, well, what if I, you know, if you named top 10 brands in the Caribbean and, you know, the likes of Virgin and the hotels, Radisson or, you know, the service industry and finance industries, and you start to look at those guys. So I targeted the top 10 and approached them to see if I could win work, and because brand association. So now Argo's doing work with Virgin. So that was the strategy, and it seemed to help us get off the ground with a bit of credibility.
Extremely smart, extremely, extremely clever to go after the big ones. That takes a high level of guts, I suppose, really, and a high level of strategy. Where did you get that from? Where did you come up with that strategy to target the big brands?
Well, I suppose while the idea of Argo was in my mind during the couple of years when I was freelancing and consulting, I was doing a lot of reading about, you know, starting your own business and you know, building a brand. And so I was learning. I was a sponge for sort of, you know, knowledge that would inform a successful startup. And I was reading all sorts of articles on LinkedIn about why businesses fail in their 4 or 6 months. You know, who are the ones that make it? Why do they make it? So I learned a lot of those tips. And so the first person I hired was actually an accountant to set up our financial structure and, you know, billable hours and that kind of thing. Because, you know, as you know, cash flow and the importance of being able to control your finances is really, you know, it's your bloodline. Yeah, that was the start. And, you know, I also looked at, you know, of course, activating my network. You know, yes, I was only in Barbados for 3 months, but in that 3 months, you know, I'd always have a coffee with somebody new every day. Have a coffee with someone. They may not be able to give you work, but they may be able to educate you. You might learn from them. They might give you an insight to the industry. So every day was a coffee with someone. Even in that 3 months, I established a network. You know, there's a small Irish community in Barbados, and that obviously helps.
I was going to ask you that. We get absolutely everywhere, even in Barbados, I'd imagine there's a few knocking about.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that part... part of the network that opened opportunities, you know, the Irish connection. Again, we try to seize upon that. So on Paddy's Day, I would send, you know, in Argo's probably only 4 or 5 months old, and I got about 100 cupcakes made with shamrocks and Bayesian flags on them, and sent them to all of our potential clients. Nice. Clients that we were in discussions with on projects. So little initiatives like that, Gary, just helped nudge us along step by step to get some traction in the market.
You took to the startup game quick. All the little flourishes came straight away. That's nice. So I was reading through your list of projects, and it seems like you've gone from island to island. Is that kind of the culture in the Caribbean too, that you work not just in one country, you work across multiple territories?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, Barbados is a village, you know, 270,000 people. Yes, it's got a lot of business opportunity here, but, you know, not to sustain the ambition that I have for Argo, which is big projects, international projects, airports, residential towers. And so I knew that it was always going to be jumping on planes to new territories to win projects. But, you know, we've done work in 24 different countries around the Caribbean.
How did that come about? Like, how did you go from step to step to step? Talk me through actually how you grew out your team, because I think that's what a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with, is struggling to grow out a team. And especially now, you know, I suppose by force, you had to have a displaced workforce. You had to have a workforce across multiple territories. How did you set that up?
Yeah, so just a bit of an overview that the companies. So Barbados was the headquarters of Argo, and, you know, where Argo was founded. But of course, there was also an attraction of setting up an office in Dublin, because Argo's DNA of, you know, digital construction was all fueled by expertise in this new technology, this new process of BIM that I described earlier. And of course, the colleges in Ireland were producing incredibly talented students who'd mastered this technology. And so I had the idea of, well, let's set up a Dublin office. Let's bring the top graduates into the Dublin office. And so as well as doing Irish work, these guys could play a role in our Caribbean projects, and in fact could travel to the Caribbean, because there's an obvious attraction there for a graduate to head out to the Caribbean and work for a few years. So that was the strategy. So after 3 years of Argo Barbados, we opened Argo Dublin. And I used to lecture and tutor in Bolton Street. So we did good connection into Bolton Street. So we started to bring those graduates in and, you know, train them up and ship them out to different opportunities in the Caribbean. So Adam Campbell, who leads our Dublin office, was mentoring these guys, upskilling them and preparing them for work internationally as locally. We obviously have work locally. That the Dublin office provides for. So yeah, that was the strategy there. And then after you open your second office, you realize that it's not such a big deal. We've now two offices, and looking at some of the challenges and risks of opening offices and growing offices, the strategy was, well, let's open offices in multiple territories, but keep those offices very small and versatile so that you can sustain recessions, downturns, you know, natural disasters where islands are shut down for 6 months. So if you're spreading your workload to multiple islands, then therein lies a sustainable strategy. That was the strategy then. So after Dublin, we opened Dominica and then St. Vincent. And now we've just opened an office in Jamaica at the start of the month. And again, their team will never grow beyond sort of 10 people in each office. And the beauty of that is we now end up with a staff of 42, 14 different nationalities, you know, different generations, different cultural norms, different views on architecture and design. Mm. So when we now, we might have 20 guys on a critique and a design. So instead of getting one architect who's given his view on the solution to the brief, you've got 20. Mm. So it formidable strength to Argo's approach to solving problems for clients and responding to briefs. And so we now do it through, you know, we went fully digital with all our communication a couple of years ago, which has really helped us during COVID. But so we use the Google Suite. We use Rooms. So we set up an Argo room for every single project. So first thing in the morning, I can jump on and see how many projects has Argo got on its books at the moment. 36 live projects. Mm. Every single one has a room. I can jump into that room, see the 6 or 12 architects who are inputting into that, technologists, project managers, and I can sense the energy. I can see the direction, and I can intervene or add value wherever I feel it's of benefit to the team, or just monitor and make sure things are heading towards our goals and the vision that we we shared with the client for each project. So that's how we've been able to manage the business during. It's not, I've been jumping on planes since I started the business. I've been working remotely, communicating remotely with the team. But now the team's doing it.
You've had kind of a head start on kind of every other industry in the world, having done this by design more so. So what has been the biggest challenges in setting that up? You set that up at all, you know, it sounds quite simple when you're saying it, but I think a lot of companies and entrepreneurs that are listening to this will be like, yeah, I'm tearing my hair out trying to do the exact same things. What were the biggest challenges you faced when setting up that kind of a work environment?
Well, you know, you mentioned the team, the importance of the team. But you got to step back, have a look at your organization, look at, you know, firm of architects, 90% of its expenses are its staff. And so it's all about, and your success is all down to the quality and commitment and passion of that team. So building the right team, whether you start with one and two and three and all the way up to 42, I always interviewed four times. Make sure that if we're going to commit to this, if we're right for them and they're right for us, that they know it and we know it. Mm. And that when we get them on board, they can add serious value to Argo's portfolio and the service we offer our clients. So that's very important, building the right team. Being very honest with the team, with the guys you're interviewing, letting them know that I'm incredibly difficult to work for because I'm an absolute torment for perfection and refining and obsessing about the detail, because the very day we get complacent and don't sort of knock it out of the ballpark for a client, and you know, that day is when Argo will no longer be considered for that client's future project. So we've got to be always on our toes. So being honest with the team and being honest with potential employees about that. But if you look at all 42, and I described the sort of different characters we have and different experiences, but they always shared similar traits. You look at all of our staff, they're all very passionate about what they do, whether it's project management, architectural technology, architecture, graphic design, interior design, master planning. All very passionate about their own discipline, strong work ethic, but a sort of stubborn determination to overcome any challenges. And that's certainly what you need today in business, certainly what you need in the Caribbean. We've got hurricanes coming towards your projects and the numerous challenges you face. So that was very important for me. The right team and investing in that team, mentoring that team, and overcoming challenges like COVID. So HR being on their toes. It's one of the team's birthdays, but you know, we used to bring in a cake to the studio, and now they're working remotely from their home in Spain or Bulgaria or Moscow. But they still make sure that on that birthday a day, a bunch of flowers arrives at their door from Argo. So, you know, reminders to the team of how much we value them and that they are Argo. Their Argo success. And as I said, there's also the other side of it where I've been very difficult and always very brutally honest with the team about where we've fallen short and when we need to regroup and go again before we get anywhere near presenting to the client. And that's sort of that's always been part of what I did. I've always been put in leadership positions anyway. From the very first time I put on a soccer jersey, I was my manager put on a captain's armband. Don't know why, but he obviously thought I had some leadership skills. So strong leadership, very important, and the strength of the team. And I think just on what else do you need to be able to deal with disappointment. You're going to have a bad day. You're going to get a kick in the nuts. You're going to go into a meeting where you think you're reading something and they've already awarded somebody else because of situation beyond your control, a connection. And that happens a lot. But you leave the meeting thinking they've really lost out. They're obviously not ambitious as they should be for the future of their company because they didn't hire Argo. That's the kind of mentality you have to have. And, you know, You also allow yourself a moment when you go home, put on a brave face for the family, see the kids all happy, so you know you must get the next job, or you know you got to put it behind you, and tomorrow's another day. And you've got to say that to yourself: tomorrow's going to be a great day.
Mm.
Subconsciously, you're saying, "Well, it needs to be a great day." But that's the kind of balancing act you have to do. Then, when you start winning work, you know, you learn to control that a bit better. You know, instead of being up and down, so you know, ecstatic when you win opportunities, and down in the dumps when you don't. As you get a little bit more experienced, you learn to sort of operate on an even keel, where, you know, and that's good for your heart and good for your emotions, where, you know, you're not so down in the dumps, and you can learn then to sustain the pace, I suppose, rather than being, you know, that fluctuation of being up and being down. That even keel is the secret. You learn to sort of, it helps you then things outside work, the family, the kids. Because, of course, as an entrepreneur, you're setting up a business, you throw yourself into the business 18 hours a day, nonstop. And that's what I did, and that's what everybody does. And as I said earlier, it's probably only the last couple of years I've been able to come up for a bit of air.
How do you do that? How do you step away? Because just from talking to you, I can feel the passion, and I can feel that drive for perfection. And I think that haunts a lot of entrepreneurs, and the fact that you tend to be over involved. And I talked about this, I think, on last week's pod, about you're wrapped up in the business. The two don't diverge at all. How did you, and you touched on it a little bit there, but how did you separate yourself from that? What were the tactics, and what were the ways you separated yourself from that?
Yeah, it is very difficult, and certainly, you know, there's a parallel with the stronger the company gets, and the more talented the staff, and the more senior positions you feel that the company doesn't need you 24/7 directing everything and everyone. So you can then take a holiday and turn off the phone, so to speak. You know, you're still checking on a few bits and pieces, but so it made having a holiday with the family achievable for the first time in, you know, 7 or 8 years.
Where does a man who lives in Barbados go on holiday? I have to ask that question.
Well, that's a brilliant question, Gary, because we had done a staycation to a hotel down the coast, and I was telling my buddy from back home, and he said, hold on a second, you're living in Barbados and you went on a holiday to Barbados to a hotel. That doesn't make any sense. But of course, you know, when you're living in your house and, you know, the day, the routine, the whole lot, and the change of scene is good as rest. So it does make a difference for a little staycation for a few days. So unwinding, you know, the kids to the beach is the obvious one. Barbados, incredible part of the world when you can just throw on flip-flops and grab a cooler with the kids and head down to the beach and just spend the day. Stunning turquoise waters, white sandy beaches, you know, paddle boarding, kids of a blast. And you can, if you cannot tune out at that point, then there's no tuning out for you. You know, so that's the easy one. A bit of golf. Barbados has fabulous golf courses. You know, so that they're the things I like to do to sort of step away. I changed my routine a lot since, you talk about, you know, the negatives of COVID, some of the positives. You know, pre-COVID, I was on a plane at least once a week. And, you know, because you know you're leaving Ireland, you're trying to pack everything in and, you know, running around like a headless chicken, trying to get everything organized before you leave. Then when you come back, you have a pile of stuff to catch up on. But suppose COVID hits and you're not jumping on planes, and management is stepping up in each island, and things are easier to easier from my perspective, management wise, and it allows me to, you know, establish a routine. And I've not had a routine in 10 years. So my 14-year-old is a very avid soccer player. So he does his own training. So he wakes me at 5:30 in the morning come on, lad, let's go. We've got a training session. So we do an hour on the terrace, which is lovely to see the sunrise on the terrace.
Wow.
Doing a workout. So that's how I start the day. So then my eldest son, again, as a result of COVID, who's studying law in Trinity, Killian, he's 20. He's come back to Barbados to study remotely.
I bet he has. I bet he has.
Yeah. So, you know, it's amazing the way things. So his mom is delighted to have him back under our roof, and he's good fun. And, you know, he's an entrepreneur by his own admission, for sure. So he's running he runs our sort of business expansion and investments side. And so we have an hour. So I leave the house, go to a coffee shop with him. We catch up over coffee for an hour on the bits and pieces he's working for me on. Mm. He'll head back home, jump online to his lectures, catch up on all that stuff. And, you know, into the office for the routine, as I said, check out all the chat rooms. Where can I add value? And our office in Barbados is still open. So we have our studio. Okay. So we can interact and critique drawings and sketches and details and specifications and all that stuff. So the routine, yeah. And then I walk home in the evening. And the walk home is sort of is a great one as well for people about to set up their business, because that sort of time out. And the walk home was a little bit by accident. And back to the financial side of things, you know, we were looking at opening our office in St. Vincent. The rent was $800 US for the office a month. And we needed another car for a studio leader here in Barbados. And my accountant said, we can't do both. We'll slip into the red. And I've always said to her, you know, alarm bells ring, we slip into the red. Mm. Never going to happen. She said, well, what are we going to do? I said, give the studio leader my car. I walk home from the office. Get a lift in, walk home. So kill two birds. It gives me peace of mind, walking home, time to reflect, think about, you know, future expansion, where next. So I suppose you roll with the punches that way a little bit and turn what might be negatives into positives.
Mm, the ultimate sacrifice for an entrepreneur as well, giving up your own car. As we're close to wrapping up now, but kind of bring me through what your thoughts are for the next 6 to 12 months. What are you foreseeing, and what are you planning for? I know it's very difficult at the minute with COVID. It's actually nice to get an outside perspective of someone who's not in Ireland, who is perhaps seeing things a little bit differently.
You know, it's been massively disruptive to most businesses. And as we all know, there's always opportunity in crisis and opportunity in recession. And for Argo, I think, you know, we're going to continue to expand into territories in the Caribbean, where we know there's going to be some serious growth over the coming years, such as Guyana. If you look at the way the impact COVID has had on office space and even the design of hotels, hospitality, and we have to take all that on board. Yes, you know, there's always going to be the risk of recurrence and you know, the next COVID. So we've got to look at how does that influence the way we design buildings and make sure that that's factored into the service that we offer to clients going forward. Continue to strengthen the team, but by way of expanding into new territories and not by growing each individual office. Very ambitious for our office in Dublin. We've been very lucky with the clients that we have in Ireland, in the Caribbean. You know, clients that are very progressive in their thinking about architecture. And so they've embraced architecture of its time, technology of its time, thinking differently about solutions to briefs. So there's a lot to be grateful for with the clients that we have. But we've also got to look at, you know, what can Argo do to improve the service we offer to the clients? Keep investing in technology, keep investing in the hardware to run it, and keep investing in the talent that we need to realise future clients and their ambition.
Brilliant. I think it's good to get that external kind of perspective for people in Ireland to can actually look out. David, where can people learn a little bit more? You've some incredible projects. Where can people learn more about Argo and yourself?
Yeah, so our website is argo-ds, com. And of course, they'll find me on LinkedIn and, you know, Argos on social media, usual. That's about it.
David, thanks so much for joining me in the pod.
Pleasure, Gary. Thanks very much for having me.
And that was episode 90 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. Well, what do you think of David? Fascinating character. Get in touch with me. Let me know what you thought about that interview and let me know what you thought about David. And as I said at the start, go share this podcast with one other person. Let that be your good deed for this week. Jump on WhatsApp, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and shoot the link to the Entrepreneur Experiment to one other person who needs a little bit of inspiration or who needs to hear a very good story. I will see you back here next Monday for the Idea Lab.